Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining Black Motherhood Empowerment. I'm Denise Bowles, and today we have a special show. It's fall. It's the last quarter for 2013, the last 3 months of the year. And our kids are back in school, and we're getting ready for the holidays, and we're getting ready to tie up this year. And so much has gone on this year. I just want to thank everyone for following us for the year 2013 so far. We have over 83,000 listens on this show. It's a one-woman show. I produce it. I host it. I go out there and I find relevant information to share with each and every one of you. And I thank you all for your support in following me and Black Motherhood Empowerment. You can find us here on Blog Talk Radio under Black Motherhood Empowerment. You can also find us on Facebook under Raising Princess to Be Kings, A Single Black Mother's Guide to Raising Her Black Son. That is my first book. I'm getting ready to put out the girl version of Raising Princesses to Be Queens. That's going to be dropping soon, so stay tuned for that. Also, stay tuned this fall for some very interesting shows. I have some very provocative shows, some very empowering shows focused on Black life, and that's what I like to bring to you. Professionals, people who are engaged in the struggle, in the challenges, in the awareness, and I like to bring those people here on my show to you. The call-in number today is 347-857-2381. That's 347-857-2381. Now, today's show is very special. As everyone knows by now, I am a single mom. I am a Black single mom of a son. And I've been that way for over 20 years. And now my son is now 23 years old. He has his master's degree. He is a school teacher in New York City. And I always talk on the show about the challenges and the many obstacles and obstructions and the many issues out there facing Black mothers. And we see it all the time. We hear about it all the time. And this summer, I was doing some reading, as I always do, and I came across a whole controversial thing with the commentator who happens to also be African-American. His name is Don Lemon, and I believe he's a CNN commentator. And he said some highly inflammatory things against African-Americans, and I was surprised being that he's an African-American himself. But then when I read his bio, when I read about him, and I read about other things that he said in the media in the past, I really wasn't all that surprised. And we as people have to look at where the information is coming from. We have to look at whom is saying what they're saying and what's being said, and most important, why it's being said. So with that being said, I found an article on the Feminist Wire. It was a blog, and it's titled Don Lemon and the Vilification of Unwed Mothers. And this is written by a woman. Her name is Rabia Hakima. And I read this article, I read this blog, and it was absolutely powerful. And I was so ignited by what Dr. Hakima was saying that I called her. I left emails for her. I got to be a friend on her LinkedIn page. I basically tracked her down, and I basically said, I want to have you on the show. So she's agreed to come on the show today. She's not on the air yet, but hopefully she'll be on soon. But until she comes, I'd like to talk to you about this article that she wrote. And she's talking about how Don Lemon, an African-American male, who's a CNN commentator, he's supposedly highly educated, and he's been through African-American life, he's agreeing with Bill O'Reilly about the disintegration of the African-American family, the crime rates in the African-American communities, all of these things about our boys wearing saggy pants, the use of the N-word, all of it is directed at African-American women and girls, specifically African-American moms. And I thought about this for a long time, and I'm saying, wow, that's really incredible. It was very provocative for me because I'm thinking one thing, but my eyes kept saying or kept doing, read the blog. So I did. And you know, of course, Don Lemon went on with this tirade about who should have a baby and who shouldn't, and just because you can have a baby, you shouldn't have a baby if you can't take care of it, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, Don Lemon was reporting about 72% of African-American babies are born to unwed moms. And it was a blame thing again. It's the constant rhetoric that many black women have heard so many times, and me being a black woman, raising a black son as a single parent, as a divorced single parent, I still heard it. I still caught it. It's been going on for centuries, as Dr. Hakima wrote here in her article. And let me tell you, she's not kidding with this. And what Dr. Hakima was basically talking about here in her article, she's saying basically that unwed mothers are not a social disease. And she goes on to talk about family, and she goes on to talk about economics in the family. And, you know, I'm going to have Dr. Hakima talk about her article here with us today, but for me, profoundly, this article sparked something in me that I said, I have to have Dr. Hakima on my show, because I don't think that black unwed mothers brought the guns and the gangs and the liquor stores and the check cashing stores and all of the other things into black communities. I don't think that black single moms wake up every day and say, I want my kid to fuck up today. I want my kid to be totally decimated by America. I want my kid to be incarcerated. I want my kid to be somebody else's form of job security. I want to fail in my relationships. I want to struggle. I want to be on food stamps. I want to be without a man. I don't think any black single woman in America wakes up with those thought patterns. And looking at who is saying it and the fact that it even got printed, I want to talk to Dr. Hakima about how the media picks and chooses, first of all, what is being said and what is being directed against black women, because Dr. Hakima's great article, her rebuttal to all of this, certainly didn't make national news. Okay? So we have a lot to talk about here today. And I think I have Dr. Hakima online with me. Dr. Hakima, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hello.
Oh, I'm so glad you could make it. Thank you so much for joining me. I was just talking to the audience about your provocative article/blog that drew me to you, and I had to speak to you. I had to have you on my show. I'm so glad you could join me today.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Now, Dr. Hakima, before we get started on this, because, you know, I'm ripping and raring to go, could you just tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Well, in regard to the article, I mean, I am a single parent of a son. My son is 21 years old now, and I raised him the entire time by myself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an academic and a feminist. I was also raised by a mother who, well, she was married when I was born, but she divorced, so I was raised by a single mother. So, I mean, I felt really annoyed, I guess. Maybe that's a soft word for it, by what Don
said. Be hard. Be hard, Dr. Hakima.
Yeah.
Be hard.
Yeah. Okay. I feel like I'm a champion of single mothers everywhere. I mean, I just felt like I had to say
your
something.
Article, when I read this article is dated as far back. I believe this is August 8th of 2013, so a month ago now.
Yes.
And when I
yes.
saw this article, I printed it, I sent it to people, I posted it on Facebook, I posted it all over the place. And, of course, it didn't pick up the buzz that I wanted it to, but you and I are going to keep that buzz going, Dr. Hakima, because, you know, this is really powerful. Let's talk a little bit. What galvanized you to write this article? Not just the fact that what you just explained about your background, but what else was the catalyst that really said to you, I'm going to sit down and I have to put this on paper?
I mentioned in the article those ads that were being posted around New York for about single parenthood, and I had seen something about that earlier in the year. And I think because I have just been aware of so much anti-single mother rhetoric, throughout my life and throughout, you know, and now, you know, I'm older now and I'm, you know, my son, like I said, is 21 years old. It doesn't really affect me as much, but then there are all these new young mothers out there who need the support of their communities and who aren't getting it. And I just couldn't stand to see yet again someone targeting single mothers and children of single mothers as though they were, you know, the problem with society.
Mm-hmm,
I just
mm-hmm.
don't understand how motherhood and being a child of a mother who cares about you and loves you is a disease that needs to be solved.
Yeah, it's that whole thing. You know, I'm a social worker, Dr. Habima, and you know, Hakima, and it's just that the whole blame the victim thing. I'm just tired of it. And as I said earlier in this broadcast, I don't think single moms brought certain things into our Black communities. I don't think we were even at the table. And to be honest with you, we're still not at the table of any kind of say, power, control, or authority. So to blame the invisible is almost ridiculous, to be honest. It's absolutely asinine and ridiculous. And I don't understand how the media can play up on something like that when we're not given a voice and we're not at the table and we're not in positions of control and authority. I almost think it's a cheap way out, to be honest with you.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, I think that really speaks to the fact that there are those people who speak about the problems in, quote-unquote, the Black community without really intending to solve those problems. So they find a scapegoat, and then, you know, that's an easy scapegoat. Of course, people are going to have children, and inevitably, people are going to be single having those children. So
there
will always be single. Yeah, there will always be single mothers, and so if they're the scapegoat, we can always just point to them and say that's the problem, rather than actually solving the problems. Yeah,
that's it. And here's the thing, though: is it really a problem? Your son is 21. My son is 23. I do believe our boys have done very well. I think they've come out of this, and they're decent citizens. They're contributing citizens. They've gone on with their lives. But, you know, profoundly enough, once my son made it through college, master's degree, all that stuff, how many people came up to me and said, congratulations, Dr. Habima? Not very many. But in the 23 years of raising him, if I had a dollar for every time a Black man would stand to my face and say to me, there needs to be a Black man in your house raising that Black son, I would be sitting next to Bill Gates at this point.
So the constructive
criticism comes in, but when the job is done, and when the job is done well, did you get any praise? Did you get any accolades? Did you get any recognition? Did you get anything at all?
It's almost as if it's in spite of you, that your son has grown up to be a good citizen, that it has nothing to do with you. I remember I had an argument with my father. My father, like I said, I was basically raised by my mother alone, and my father recently came back into my life, and he told me he was going to be that father figure for my son and teach him what it was to be a man. And I sort of felt insulted because here I am raising my child, teaching him how to be a human being.
Exactly.
And I said, exactly, what is it that you can teach him that I could not teach him? And he couldn't answer that.
Yeah,
that's
a pet peeve, and I do not in any way want to devalue the presence of our Black men. However, however, I do want to say that I taught my son first how to be a decent human being, and the rest followed. The rest did follow as far as respect, as far as communication, as far as being a good individual. It doesn't have anything to do with Black or white. That's the second part of it. The first part of it, how can we have this person be a decent human being who's not going to go out here and vandalize and destroy and have very low regard or low value for anything? You know what I mean? And for some reason, Black men seem to think that Black women can't do this.
Right. Yes, which is surprising to me and odd to me, yes. So these values are gendered in some way. There are certain values that only men can pass on to other men. And I want to agree with you that we don't want to devalue I don't want to downplay the value of African-American men in the lives of their children. And I do think that African-American men, if they are present in the lives of their children, can be useful influences, but I don't think that has anything to do with gender. And there are single men who are raising children.
Absolutely, and they're doing a fantastic job.
Right.
they're doing a fantastic job. Now, I want to talk about your article that was printed here on the Feminist Wire. And, you know, you were talking about how unwed mothers are not a social disease.
Right, yes.
And you were talking about Paul Amato's 2005 article, The Impact of Family Formation Change in the Cognitive, Social, and Emotional Well-Being of the Next Generation. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yes, I can talk about that. You know, I just that was, I'm trying to keep my article to 1,500 words, you know, and so that was just one of those studies, you know, and I put studies in quotation marks here, you know, that have been done about what it is that makes a good family, what it is that creates a good child, a good citizen, that was yet another article that seems to try to put science behind this vilification of unwed mothers, and
mm-hmm.
ignores so many different factors about what influences children when they're being raised, that, you know, which all of those types of articles do, all of those studies do,
mm-hmm.
ignore
mm-hmm.
different factors. What's going on? I mean, if you say there are two parents in the household and that somehow makes an automatically better environment for a child, but what is the dynamic between those two parents?
Exactly. Because
yes.
As a social worker, I've been in two-parent homes where the kid is on parole, he's a drug abuser, he's dropped out of school, and then I've been in a home where there's a one parent, and the kid is a model person on a way to a very bright future. So you're right. This whole thing and what you were talking about here with this study, in quotes, that was done saying that the message seems to be that unwed mothers are typically poor. Poor people shouldn't have children. If unwed mothers
right.
experience more stress, perhaps this is because they have to consistently contend with the public message that they do not have the right to exist.
Right. Exactly. That's, again, the other factors that I'm talking about here, right? Paul Amato made that argument that unwed mothers have to deal with more strife, therefore they're more likely to have to spend less time focusing on their children. And I
mm-hmm.
think that is true to some extent. I mean, I think it's true for any parent, whether they're heterosexual and married or homosexual or single, that if they are dealing with a lot of other mental health issues and stress and all sorts of other things, then obviously that's going to have an impact on how they parent. But that's not exclusive to unwed mothers. Other parents can experience stress. And the idea that, well, because we say now unwed mothers are the worst kind of parent, the worst parental situation for a child is an unwed mother, then we're going to heap all of this societal pressure onto those people, which is then going to create more stress for those people, which is then going to have a negative impact on their children. So
that's
we're
right.
sort of making it come true.
Yes. We are delivering the inevitable. We are delivering something to me that is avoidable.
Right, exactly.
We are simply feeding into that. And the fact that single moms who are successful, who raise upstanding, contributing citizens, are not celebrated, I think
right,
is an atrocity.
Right.
And it's also a hypocrisy. It really is.
Yeah.
Because, in other words, unless you need me, unless you're in a crisis, then I can't see you.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
If you're doing well and you're you know, well who, then it becomes, oh, well, you're all that. Well, who do you think you are? Well, you're too bougie for me.
Right, exactly.
This is a sore spot for me too, Dr. Hakima, very sore spot because like I said earlier, no single woman or who's a woman in general who's been in a relationship and finds herself pregnant wakes up and says, I want my kid to tank. I want my relationship to fail. Nobody wakes up and says that. You know?
Right.
So the fact that this constant accusatory attitude is focused on black single moms, it's really hypocrisy. It really is. And for Don Lemon, who's also homosexual, okay, and he says, well, you know, I was picked on a lot when I was a kid because of my homosexuality. I was targeted a lot by blacks. So what I'm seeing here from a psychological point of view is he really does have some underlying issues that have not been addressed with any kind of psychological intervention,
right.
maybe. that would help him get over his hatred of black people. Because let's face it, Don, Mr. Lemon, if your single mom, if your mom wasn't who she was, you wouldn't be sitting in the CNN chair commentating. Somebody got you there.
Somebody got you there.
Mm-hmm. You didn't just get there by osmosis. You didn't just get there by the act of Congress. You didn't get there by a food stamp or a HEOP program.
Right.
You got there because somebody made sure you had a chance to get there.
Exactly.
And if there's one thing I hear a gazillion times, and I've been out in the arena for a long time, Dr. Hakima, as far as parent advocacy, and I've seen all these big guys, these black men who pontiff, and they get out there and they speak it, and they're single-parent sons also. You know, and Kevin Powell is one of my absolute favorites on this. Watch him. My mom was a single mom. I watched her clean. I watched her struggle. She did all this stuff for me. Yeah, but I didn't have this, and I didn't have that, and I didn't get this. And I never raised my son on an attitude of a deficit. It's almost hypocritical to say, yeah, I was raised by a single mom, and you're in a very lucrative, very financially stable position in life, and you're going to still say, but. There should never be a but in your statement at all. You got where you are because someone made sure you got there.
Right, exactly. Exactly. I'm not sure I understand this attachment we have to financial status and good parenting. We make this connection between economics and good parenting as if how much you supply for your child determines how good a parent you can be.
Yes. There's another thing. It's called keeping up with the Joneses. And you know, to ascribe to being a good single parent, you must have this. You must show, your kid must dress this way. They must keep up with the Joneses. And that does not mean the kid is happy either, because I've seen a lot of very affluent children who are in therapy, and they're absolutely miserable. They're on behavior modification drugs, and they're miserable, and they grow up to be miserable people. But society says, you know, we have to do this. This is a sign of success, and this is a gauge, rather, a ruler, a measuring stick, really, on success, and this is what we must do. So, you know, I'm just still reading. I'm still talking, but I'm still going over your article again. And, you know, you're saying that the school is discrimination against unwed mothers and their children is pervasive, you know, and it's true. It's all over the place. God help you if you're a black woman and you walk into a church and you're a single mom.
Right, yes.
God help you. You know, and I had my son in a public school, and because he was a single mom kid, they thought it was okay to put him in a group called the Banana Splits because, you know, he was a kid of a divorced home. And it's like, I didn't ask you to put him in that program. My son is fine. Why does he need another classification on top of being black male? Why does he need another subclassification? You know, and let's put him in another category. Oh, he's in a single parent home, and immediately ascribe at risk. Why is he at risk?
Right, exactly. Yes, that was when I went through my master's program. That was eye opening. This term, and then I thought back over my whole experience with the public school system and with my son, and I understood all of the things that I had experienced with the way that the teachers and the principals. Interacted with me, that there is that they're being taught, that teachers are being taught this, that there is a student that you can identify based on their social circumstances as being less apt than other students. And
absolutely true in the education system. If your son or daughter is a single parent kid, they are targeted as being less than. They are valued at a level of needing services, high risk, at risk, all those other wonderful things. But when the parent who is a single parent stands up and says, excuse me, my kid's proficiency exams, those standardized tests, he's off the charts, he's doing very well, then once you get them to back off, then that's a whole nother story.
Yeah.
It's a whole nother story. It's so challenging to get single parents to not buy into what the society and what the system is trying to ascribe to our children.
Right. And my problem with most of the teachers that my son had when he was in school was that they just weren't challenging him enough. And I kept saying, well, I mean, he's doing this, but he could do more. He's doing
yes.
this. But they were saying, you know, no, he can go at his own pace. And, you know, and I eventually chose to homeschool him for middle school and high school. And, you know, his reading scores jumped when I started homeschooling him because I was like, you're not going to read that. You're going to read something at this level. And, you know, I kept challenging him.
Okay.
I don't know where he would be if I had just
kept
listening to the teachers and, you know.
Right. Exactly. Now, for me, it was the other side of the coin. I enrolled my son into a Montessori program. So he came into the public school system with this very strong foundation of education from a very young age, and he was outside of the box always. So they were looking at us like, where did he go to pre-K? Where did he go to nursery school? Did he have nursery school? I said, yeah, he's been reading since he's three, and he went to Montessori. And they're like, oh, because he learns differently. Yeah. He learns the way he's supposed to learn, not the way you're telling him to learn.
Right.
Plain and simple.
Yeah.
Plain and simple. Absolutely. But I'm reading your article here, and you're saying about how you went for a local YMCA membership, and, you know, as a single mom, you had to prove your single mother status.
Right.
Wow.
Right. You had to prove basically that you had been married at some point, that you had been married when your child was conceived.
Because that is the
only way to have a child, you know, to have a real family, is to have been married.
Oh my God.
Maybe you're widowed or divorced through no fault of your own, but you had to have been married to begin with. And, you know, and I did ask that question about victims of sexual assault because that is my experience. That's my situation.
Yeah.
There was no option of marrying the father of my child.
Mm-hmm.
No, thank you.
Yeah.
So, you know, and they just sort of, I mean, that's our policy. So the idea is that they couldn't even acknowledge other possibilities for how children come into the world. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That was my niece.
Great. Yeah. So I'm just absolutely stunned that it is allowed to continue at the level that it does. And how many other single moms that are going to be listening to this are saying, yeah, you know what, I went through the same thing. And you're talking about here, you're saying unwed mothers have to deal with moral judgments of random people they meet. They eventually stop bringing up the fact that I was a single mom just to avoid the inevitable conversation. Are you married? No. Are you divorced? No. Are you widowed? No.
Right, exactly. That happened in every class that I took as a student, and just everywhere I went, that was the question. If I brought up my son, well, make sure that, you know, they had to just sort of, I guess I had to legitimate myself and my son. I had to make sure that I was fitting into the social norm. And then I got those looks when they realized, okay, and I don't know what they were thinking about me after, you know, the nose. They never said, you know, again, it was always the possibility of whether or not you're married or not. And once they find out you're not married, okay.
And you're talking here about, you use a term here in your article of Eurocentric racism, okay? You want to explain what you feel Eurocentric racism is?
Well, Eurocentric racism is, and I mean, I think most people just say racism when they're talking about Eurocentric racism. I just like to be more specific. But, I mean, here we're talking about just the idea that the African-American is automatically on the bottom of the social hierarchy here in America.
Yes.
That, you know, all of that impetus to stop African Americans from breeding, essentially, which is what this whole thing about unwed mothers really, you know, I think part of the motivation for that is that that it's better to have a Eurocentric, European household, a European American household, European American values, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
I mean,
and
when I say Eurocentric racism is just racism. I mean,
yeah, and we've seen in two-parent homes, we've seen the dysfunction, we've seen it depicted in films, we've seen the incest, we've seen the alcoholism, we've seen the domestic violence, we've seen all those things. But yet still, Eurocentric racism is saying that black families who are single-parent families really aren't family, they're not on the same value level because they're not two-parent households.
Right, exactly.
so, you know, we've seen a dysfunction there. And to be honest with you, I'm a divorced single mom, but rather than have those dysfunctions in my house raising my son, I chose to remain single until he was grown.
Right.
You know, and how many other women feel the same way? They're like, you know what? I don't want someone coming in here and messing with my kid. I don't want someone coming in here thinking they can beat me or hit me or you know, create violence in my home. I don't
right.
want that. You know, it's a conscious, a lot of women make a conscious choice for the obvious reasons that are out there. And
then
you
are
know,
not celebrated for it, which is interesting. Yes, yes, I'm sorry. Cut you off.
Yeah,
but yes,
not,
then are not celebrated for it because that's
no,
what you would
no.
expect.
No, and because, as you said earlier, too, the black man himself is saying to the black woman, oh, you're a single parent mom. Why don't you have a man in that house raising that boy? Let me step
yes.
in and help you do it because, you know, I can raise him. Do you know how many offers I had in the years of raising my son, how many men had stepped forward and said, let me raise him? And I'm looking at them like, are you serious? You don't know anything about this human being. I know him. I carried him for 9 months. You know, I'm the one. You know, what
right.
makes you think I can't do this? I chose to keep this pregnancy. I chose to keep this baby. What makes you think I can't do this?
Right.
You know, and I'm not saying for the women who are out there arbitrarily promiscuity, having children out of wedlock and not being able to take care of them and they're unfit. I'm not, that's a whole nother show. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the women out there who are holding it down. They're not asking for anything. They're minding their own business. And society comes in and says, hey, you're a single mom, right? You should have a man up in there. It's absolutely ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. And you're saying here in your article that there's a centuries-old stereotype that African-American women and girls are hypersexual and procreate uncontrollably without thoughts of consequences. Now, that's
right.
pretty funny. We just had Miley Cyrus up here twerking and masturbating on national TV.
Right, exactly. Exactly. But of course, then you notice that we had all of those there was responses to that saying that she was appropriating black culture by doing that, which is even more annoying because then you have, wait a minute, is that black culture? That's what black culture is? Okay.
And I'm looking right. around like, you know, I've never seen my grandmother twerk. I never saw my grandmother
okay.
masturbate. So I don't know what black culture they're talking about.
Right, exactly.
So it's like, really? I didn't see my elders do anything like this. So black culture, I don't even know how to twerk. If somebody asked me right now, Denise, could you twerk? I'd have to really think about it because I
right,
really don't
exactly.
understand the whole concept anyway. So is this really part of black culture?
Right.
So, yes, you're right. Women, African-American women and girls, hypersexual. All we can do is fornicate
right.
and procreate uncontrollably,
right.
they're saying, uncontrollably,
right.
without
mm-hmm.
thoughts of consequences.
Exactly. I mean, so that's why
wow.
we need to be lectured to by people like Don Lemon telling people to wait until you get married to have a child because obviously when these women, all these single mothers out there are not really thinking about what are the consequences of having a child without a man, right? They're just
right.
having
and
children.
What's that science show on TV, I'm a teenager and I'm pregnant?
Oh,
how
yes.
many of those
yeah.
women, how many of the, aren't they all white on that show? Did we?
Yeah.
Did you have? Did you see any black teen moms up on that show? I didn't see any.
No, exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. I'm completely floored with that. That it's just only black women and black girls who are just
right.
arbitrarily having babies for the sake of having babies, and they're just not thinking about
right.
the consequences.
Right.
Hmm.
This is something that's been going on for centuries. I mean, Thomas Jefferson
oh, yeah.
has, you know, wrote about African Americans and their relationships to their children, and how, in fact, African Americans don't have. Well, I mean, he didn't say African Americans. I'm cleaning up his language, but African Americans didn't have the same kinds of attachments to their children as European Americans had. So,
right.
you know, of course, they can have lots of children without thinking about the way that they will be raised or the resources that they have. Or they just have children, and then you know, who cares what happens to them?
Right.
That's,
right.
Yeah.
And from an empowerment. It does. And from an empowerment model that you're saying here in your article, you're saying that it serves a patriarchal and heterosexist power structure because it encourages
right.
women to feel that their primary goal in life should be to marry a man, that a man is going
right.
to complete you.
Right. Exactly.
And,
it can happen.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Marriage is a beautiful thing. But there's,
right.
there's another side of it that could also be very abusive and very controlling.
Right, exactly, exactly. And then the idea that women are better off economically if they marry first, whether or not they are so they are economically stable, if they just get
right.
married, that's where the economic stability lies. That's really a fallacy. I mean, I remember I don't know. When I was writing the article, I was trying to find the this early clip from Soledad O'Brien's special, Black in America, the very
okay.
first one.
Okay.
And there was this panel of people. I think Cornel West was on there. I couldn't remember. I could never find the video, so I could never couldn't access this. But there was this one woman, and they were talking about single mothers in the Black community.
Of course.
one woman interrupted everybody, and she said, why don't we not make marriage the ideal? Why don't we talk instead about encouraging girls to become economically stable on their own, to get education, to have careers and before they become parents, rather than just getting married? Why should marriage be the ideal? And there was this quiet moment where everybody just sort of looked at her like she had said something in Martian, and then they went back to talking about, the typical narrative about how unwed mothers and lead to economic instability and so on.
Right.
And it was just odd to me. I was trying to find it, so I was looking everywhere for it online, and I couldn't find it. Because I really wanted to quote this woman, but anyway.
Yeah, that says a lot too. And of course the hypocrisy of America. When a strong, successful woman does stand up. And when she does do a lot of good things, and then as an aside, you'll find out, she was a teen mom, and she went back to school and got her GED, and she went to college, and she's now a congresswoman, and she's now a lawyer, and she's now a surgeon, and she's now... So what do you say to that?
Right, exactly.
What do you say to that? But it's really for the Black women... The women of color that are not even the Asian, not even the Latino, it is for the Black women that are basically labeled as the cause for the atrocities
right, exactly.
and the crime and all the negative things that happen here in America by being unwed mothers. No other ethnicity is at fault. It is only the Black single
right.
moms.
Yes.
It's like,
yes. Every
really?
Once in a while you hear a sort of, yes, it's a generic discussion about single mothers, but yes, it is African American women, single mothers who are the ones who are targeted as the. But I think that is because also whenever people talk about crime in America or drugs in America or any other sort of whatever people consider to be a social problem, typically African Americans are the ones who carry the weight of that. So even if they talk about it in general terms, it always gets down to let's talk about crime. It's African American crime, or Black on Black crime, or Black crime in Black America in the Black communities, and so on.
But it's assumed; it's immediately assumed that it's a Black person who perpetuated the crime, who is the
right,
perpetrator.
Exactly.
It's immediately
exactly.
assumed,
exactly.
immediately assumed. And it's really like I said, I've said it to other people. I've never said it in the media mainstream before, and I will put it out there now. I think the African American community needs to sue media of America. For portraying Blacks in such a negative way,
right,
continuously,
yes.
without cause.
Right, exactly.
It's perpetual, it's continual, and
right.
I don't understand it. I just read an article today about how women from Africa, Black women in Africa, are trailblazing as far as political leadership, advocacy, and feminine leadership. But does that make
right.
mainstream news? No.
No.
Our Prime
no,
Minister
of
France is Black. But does those type of empowerment things make news? Does Bill O'Reilly have something to say about that? No.
No. Yes. There is a particular narrative, and media is sticking to that narrative, and they don't budge. And it's
they
really,
don't.
It's,
they
it's
won't
really
budge.
Harmful. what's interesting about it is how many people buy into that. I mean, in my classes that I teach, quite a lot of my students have these ideas, and you know, they just sort of say these things like, of course all Black people are on welfare, you know, of course.
Yes.
Yes. Of course, most crime is committed by African Americans. Yes. Of course. This is just a fact, because I heard it on, you know, I saw it on the internet, or I heard it on the news.
Oh, yes, absolutely, completely true, where the mainstream America absolutely believes that the majority, if not all Black people, are on food stamps, receiving welfare, receiving TANF, receiving some type of social assistance, and it is absolutely amazing at what they truly think it's true. But when you walk into a social service office, you'll be very surprised at what you see.
Wait, I try to tell them the reality, and I don't think they believe me. I think I'm making it up. But in fact,
I would love for Soledad O'Brien to go ahead and to actually take her cameras into these places and show exactly who is really in these. Because it's not what people think it is. It's not at all. It absolutely is not made up of a majority of Black people. In my Department of Social Services here in my county, there's a lot of white and Latinos sitting up in there. There's very few Blacks. And if they are sitting up there, they've been in there for a long time. You know? So I just find that to be very interesting, how the hype is perpetuated over and over and over again, where it is inherently believed, that Blacks are making up the majority of these programs. And I just find that to be absolutely amazing. As a matter of fact, I used one of the quotes here from one of my presentations I do, and it says, "Black pathology is big business. 2/3 of teenage mothers are white, 2/3 of welfare recipients are white, and white youth commit most of the crimes in this country."
Right.
But who is blamed? Who is at fault? Who is the onus put on? It's put on Blacks.
Exactly. Yes.
You know, okay, we just had the shooter in the Navy Yard, but the past 3 major crimes were conducted by whom? White people.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, we had our one Black atrocity for the year, but you know, Columbine, all of these other atrocities are white driven.
Yes.
But you know, it's just that the Black pathology is that we are the causation, and it is our fault for any type of negative crime, rash of drug use, of any kind of deviant behavior, and it's really prevalent in our schools.
Right.
It's prevalent in so many places.
Right. And it's funny that you should bring up all of these mass shootings. This is one thing I point out to my students in terms of how, when I talk about how the media, you know, analyzing media and how the media perpetuates certain narratives and is rhetorical. If you look at the articles that are about the shootings that were perpetrated by Euro-American men, when you read the first articles that come out before they show pictures of the criminal, you know, they say a person or a man walked in, shot, you know, et cetera, right? I told them, you can always sort of guess at the ethnicity of the person who was the suspect, because if it was an African American or a Latino, they would say a Black male they would say it right from the get-go.
Even
the Virginia Tech shooting, I was like, oh, I know this person is not African American. I knew
exactly
that from the get-go.
Exactly. And that's why I personally feel that Black America needs to sue the media of America for its constant racial profiling and targeting that has perpetuated the media to have a one-sided perspective of the Black race.
Right.
I mean, people didn't just get this on their own. They were fed this systematically. They were fed this over and over and over again, to the point that when I encounter white people and they're like, oh, don't you know so-and-so? Why would I know him? Oh, because, well, I figured you would know him because he's black. Well, I'm not a dolphin. I don't have that sonar in between my eyes where I know
right.
every other dolphin in the ocean.
Right, exactly.
You know,
yes, I mean, all of that, yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
All of that media, that media narrative about African Americans gets, and when people buy into it, it does influence how they think then about African Americans that they meet, you know.
Absolutely.
It influences how different classmates interact. Employers, you know, and so on. Yes. So it really does have an effect.
It does have an effect. When you don't see, articles out there saying Latino women really should integrate and start dating out their race.
Right. Exactly. Oh, you saw that article.
Asian women really need to start dating out their race.
Right.
You don't see that. The only race of people that have been told to start dating outside of their race are black women.
Right.
Black women. Now,
exactly.
I have friends who are Latina. I have friends that are Asian. I have friends that are very diverse. And guess what they're saying, too? Gee, Denise, I really can't find a good man. But for some reason, the media is very quick to jump on the fact when a black woman says it, oh, well, it's because most of your men are in jail, and most of your men are this, and most of your men are that. And I would love for the United States to do a census on exactly who is incarcerated.
Right.
And the numbers would astound you on the different ethnicities and the different races that are incarcerated. But they want you to believe that it's 100% made up of black males, and that's not true. So,
yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
It's just
–
so that's why I feel the media has really, really made this worse for blacks than it has to be, and that's why I don't buy into media. And that's why I didn't really buy into the whole Don Lemon thing, because Don Lemon is a troubled man. He needs psychological intervention. He's carrying major issues from his childhood against blacks, and he now has a position that he feels is powerful enough to verbalize his hurt, hurt people, hurt other people. And this is
right.
a really inappropriate form for him to verbalize and vocalize his personal issues, really.
Right.
And
yeah,
the fact that no one told him to sit his little ass down and get some get some therapy is a shame. It really is. Because he's angry. He is pissed off. You can tell he is.
Yeah.
But, you know, let's getting back to your article. You're saying if the goal is to nurture healthy children, you said your five pieces of advice in your article. Number one, stop telling children of unwed mothers that they needn't bother striving for success because their bleak destinies were fixed the moment their mothers conceived. Wow.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's why, I don't know about you, Dr. Hakima, but when my son graduated, and yes, you can call it bragging at this point, when my son graduated at 22 with a master's degree in education, he's a fifth grade school teacher, this is why I was jumping up and down and running up and down the street screaming, because he was already predestined to be in an orange suit.
Right,
he
exactly.
was predestined to be a serial number, a bed number. He was predestined to be a baby daddy, okay? Society already predestined my son to be a gazillion things, as I'm sure they predestined your son as well.
Exactly. Yes.
And he was told this in the public school system. He was told that.
Right.
You know, society told him that. They told it to me.
This is what is going to happen when you have a child out of wedlock.
This is what's going to happen when you have
a child
out of this is what's going to happen. This is what's going to happen. And how dare you succeed and go against
exactly.
our prediction? How dare you? And now that you've done it, we're basically going to ignore you and your son. Because you're not basically fodder for job security for us. How dare you?
Right.
So the other advice you give is to encourage communities to support unwed mothers.
Right.
I agree.
Right.
Wholeheartedly. Why are they stigmatized? Why are they labeled? Why are they compartmentalized? Why are they shunned? Why are they basically branded and separated?
Exactly.
Why do we have that? Why?
Yeah.
I don't understand it. And it doesn't happen in other countries, but that's another story.
Right.
Number three, you said, understand that the unwed mother as a social disease narrative perpetuates homophobia and sexism. Now, Dr. Hakima, you got to talk about this one.
you know, it is what I think I said earlier, just that this idea that women are supposed to be, I want to say enslave themselves to a man, because I think that's sort of how marriage is really being thought about by these people who are vilifying unwed mothers, that the unwed mother is a sort of loose cannon. She's just out there doing who knows what with her children. She needs a man to take charge of that household. You know,
mm-hmm.
And so this is a heterosexist idea, a sexist
yes.
idea. You know, right? So that
yes.
women out there who are lesbian mothers parenting together without a man in their household are being told that they can't raise their children properly, and the evidence shows that they can. And
mm-hmm.
then women who are you know just. For whatever reason, are raising their children on their own without men, are
mm-hmm.
being told, well, you really need to have a man. Why don't you have a man?
Mm-hmm.
Get a man.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, I have to tell you, Dr. Hakima, I don't know if you've heard it, but I've heard this, and I've heard this from my fellow black people. When I was raising my son, over 20 years of raising him, I was told he's going to grow up and be gay. He's going to grow up and be a homosexual because you're raising him by yourself. Now imagine how I felt that my
exactly.
own black people would think that of me. That, mm-hmm. And first of all, if he was a homosexual, then he's not accepted?
Right, exactly.
You know, and to think that, you know, wow, you're basically telling me I'm going to basically just screw up my own kid.
Right. Exactly.
And that this is something completely said without any kind of intellectual thought or consideration. Because as you and I know, Dr. Hakima, because we come from academia, where do most
yes.
of our homosexual children come from? Two-parent homes.
Yes. Right.
They don't come from single-parent homes. They come from two-parent yes. homes. And
right.
homosexuality has nothing to do with raising what? Because there's a
right.
gazillion kids out here who are being raised by lesbian and homosexual parents, and they're strictly
right.
heterosexual children.
Right, exactly.
You know?
Yes,
so I find that to be absolutely a sin.
Right.
It is so ignorant when I
right.
hear people say that, oh, you're going to raise him by yourself. He's going to turn out to be gay. You're going to make him gay. And I'm like, really? I don't know. And I know a lot of homosexual fathers of two parenting homes, they are saying the same thing. Yeah, well, when we adopt our kids, we're being told, well, you know, you're going to make them gay. It's like,
right.
really?
Yeah.
But that really cut through me like a hot knife in butter when I was raising Jordan. And I don't know about you, Dr. Hakima, but I took a lot of rhetoric. I took a lot of people's
yeah.
opinions. I didn't ask for these opinions, but they gave
right.
it out no matter what.
Right.
Did you get that?
From extended family, from strangers. Yes, I did.
You know, everything.
Yeah.
Everything from
yeah.
my son's going to be gay, he's going to be weak,
yeah.
he's going to be in prison,
right.
he's going to be a failure, he's going to be
right.
everything. They gave me the worst case scenarios possible.
Right,
the worst.
Exactly.
The
right.
worst. No one ever said, Denise, you're doing a great job. It was only until Jordan got old enough and I started mentoring and advocating for other parents that they're like, you know what, you're really good at this. But when my son graduated from college, I can count on one hand the number of people that actually made an effort to personally congratulate me and Jordan on the success of his completion of his studies and going on.
Congratulate you. That is an accomplishment. That you graduated.
And I congratulate you too, Dr. Hakima. But
yes.
you know, the sad thing is the community should have been celebrating, and they weren't.
Right, exactly.
But what we do celebrate, and I know you've seen this, Dr. Hakima, they celebrate when your kid comes home from prison. They celebrate that.
Yeah.
but when your kid graduates from college with a master's degree, there's no celebrate. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like,
right.
oh,
yes.
yeah. How's he doing? so congratulations. Oh, yeah, I remember. It's really amazing how hypocritical we as black people, as you said earlier in our broadcast, how they bought into this, and they're very hypocritical about it.
Right, exactly.
I don't know. That's just my bug in the bonnet or whatever. But let me finish up the other suggestions you have. You said, number four, realize that a child is always a gift, never a symptom of social disease. Now, that's very powerful. As a social worker, Dr. Hakima, that's what really got me. Ah.
Yes.
That is amazing.
Disagree with that in the comments section, which I didn't quite understand. I think I had a couple of people who sort of took issue with that statement. Children are not always a gift. There was somebody who was pro-abortion or pro-choice. She called herself pro-choice. I think she's really pro-abortion. But she suggested that children are not always a gift. And I don't understand that attitude, that somehow whatever the child is being born into determines the value of that child's life.
Yep.
That, to me, is annoying.
If you're born a Kennedy, then you're okay.
Right, exactly. First of all, the idea that always an unwed mother is poor, always an unwed mother
is
on welfare or something, or that she has, a poor educational background or something, that is a fallacy by itself. And so they assume that the unwed mother is always a bad situation for the child. But then to say that the child then doesn't deserve to exist because of that doesn't make sense to me.
Right. Right. Let's target the child and devalue them, to devalue the mother, devalue the child.
Right. Yep. People rise up out of unsavory situations all the time. People come out of all sorts of obstacles and rise to greatness.
Oprah televises them all the time.
Exactly. Right.
So number five, you say here, recognize that women can be good role models for their children, as evidenced by the fact that many children of unwed mothers grow up to be healthy, happy, kind, law-abiding, intelligent, talented young people, just like my son. And my son, too, Dr. Kima.
Yes, exactly.
You know, if we look back on how many single-parent kids, like the President of the United States, Barack Obama, grow up to be somebody, this is possible, isn't it? Imagine that.
Right.
Imagine that.
Yes. Wow. And then, too, his unwed mother, or his single mother, was not African American, so that helps a little bit, I think, for him.
Oh, well, imagine if she was black, imagine how he would have turned out.
Exactly. I know that those people who are going to. This is why I was going to bring up Obama in my article, and then I thought, well, but people are going to say, well, she wasn't an African American single mother. Those are the bad ones, right? But there are many single mothers. You know, my son is in college. He's studying filmmaking. I don't know, if I had left him in the public school system, I don't know where he would be now.
Right, exactly, because the system is not focused to produce strong African-Americans because the system was never intended or created for African-Americans. We just got integrated in there, 60 years ago?
Right.
This was not made for us. We kind of pushed our way in. That's what parents need to understand.
They're still segregated.
It's very much it's systematically segregated, but it's not the obvious of the separate bathrooms and water fountains, but there's still a segregation within our education system. But Dr. Hakima, we're running out of time, but I do want you to, what advice would you leave our listeners today? If you had something to say, what advice would you leave to them about single motherhood?
Well, if you are a single mother or you're thinking about becoming a single mother, I would say, try very hard to ignore that negative rhetoric and remember that you determine your own outcomes. If you are not getting what you need in the public school system, either leave the public school system or supplement your child's education, which is what I did early on, supplement his education. And I'm sure that's what you did, to teach your child at home if you have to, read to him at home. He's not going to get read to in school, or he or she. And then if you are not a single mother, but you are someone who either knows a single mother or may come in contact with a single mother, to treat that person with as much respect as you would any other mother, that motherhood, that parenthood, that is something that we should celebrate, especially good parenthood, that we shouldn't assume that because somebody is not married, that means that they cannot be a good parent, and then we should then treat them with such disrespect that influences how they are able to parent.
Thank you so much. Thank you. That's what I've been saying all along. And Dr. Hikima, I'm going to ask you to come back and be a guest when we talk about homeschooling as well, because I know you have a lot to say about that too. But I can't thank you enough for being part of the Black Motherhood Empowerment Show. I'm Denise Bowles, listeners. Thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you, Dr. Hikima. Her article, I put it on the chat page. You can find it on the Feminist Wire, dated back from August 8th of this year. And read it, share it. And if you can empower a single Black mom in your community, please do so. Please give her the link to my shows. They're free. Thank you so much for joining us and listening. Thank you so much for sharing this valuable tool of resource of empowerment. We're having another great show tomorrow where we're talking about forced sterilization of Black women, and we're talking about reproductive health of Black women. But thank you all so very, very much for listening, and have a great day. Please stay empowered.